greetings and welcome to another episode excuse me of the Conscious Observer. I know that you are becoming more conscious, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, because the circumstances of life and the circumstances of our condition in this country. And when I say our, I'm being kind of presumptuous, because I think that I'm talking to a black audience, but I couldn't be talking to some white people. But I'm if I am speaking to white people as well, you're free to listen. You know, this is a space for you as well. But the primary target is black people. The primary target for me is black people, and the primary target for white people is black people. Listen, regardless of how you see yourself in this world, regardless of all the inundations and all the obstacles, regardless of the insecurity, regardless of the narration that's being posed onto you that you grew up with, you a nigga, you ain't nothing. Your mother a nigga, your daddy, he a nigga. You come from a lineage of niggas. Regardless of that superimposed ideology that's in your mind, my mind, that causes us to have a self-defeatist self, you know, when people say, well, I'm gonna take myself out the equation, that's impossible. You can't take black out the equation. You can't take yourself out the equation, because the equation itself, it rests on the shoulders of black people. There will be no equation. There would be no variables. There would be no, there would be nothing for the equation to be formulated around if there was no black. Once you take black out of the equation, then the equation itself falls apart. And that's really what I'm getting to. We should take ourselves out the equation, but in the sense of what people speak on as far as remove, I'm gonna take myself out the equation. No, beloved. Don't have that idea of yourself that you are that insignificant that you could just be put away. This entire country rests on the bones and the flesh of black people. The reason why they're killing black people is not, it's because, well, they hate black people. Most white people hate black people. Most to not all. The percentile is so high, it would be stupid to start with the ones that don't. So if you on here as some white person that think you're the exemption, or you're the outlier, you're the one white person, you're the mythological good white person, I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. You're not good. You're not good. You still need to go through a process of re-engineering your soul. You're not good. And how do I know you're not good? Because we not good. And if we not good, you sure as hell ain't. So don't come around us with these postures as you are the holier. How the hell did you get to be holy? What process did you go through that rectified the conditions of your wretched soul? What did you do? Did MLK have to die? Did the death of Jesus or the death of MLK rectify and cleanse you of all your sins? No, don't play these imaginary games with me. those type of argument, well, not, they're not arguments, they're statements, they're sentimental statements that are being used as bullets into the psyche of black people to make black people docile. White people don't hate me. It's a very deceiving act. It's very deceptive to have somebody around you that pretends that they are so innocent, so innocuous, wouldn't hurt a fly. But everything about them tells you that they actually do hate you. And you just don't see it because everything happens in such innocent language. The innocence language tricks your brain into thinking that you're not listening to an enemy. When the white people tell jokes, that's very serious. You know, I work with two white people. I work at kind of like a private company. We do outdoor work. And these two white people that I work with, I have problems with them every day. But it takes, well, for one, I can register that there's a problem. A lot of us don't know how to register white supremacy. You're blind to it. You're fine with it. You laugh at jokes that white people tell about black people just as much. You think some of you laugh at your own self around white people. Some of you are so self-hating that you get around white people and start acting like buffoons and their personal court jester, making them laugh. You got an afro. And I'm going to get on the subject of the afro in modern times. The afro in modern times is not a symbol of black strength. The afro in modern times is a symbol of black submissiveness to white people. The very afro, it shows that you have an unkept mind. It shows that your mind is not in accordance with the times that we live in, and it shows that your mind is unkept. And when you have an afro, you come around white people and you let them pet you all up in the head like you some damn dog. And this is the preconditioning to killing you. You're being prepped for kill when you make yourself the same as an animal. You're being prepped for destruction when you go along with white people's jokes. When white people can come around you and be offensive in a nice way and you don't say anything, and in fact, you laugh at it. You're being prepped for destruction. You're being prepped because in their minds, there should be a negative reaction when they do negative things. But white people are scientific and they probe the psyche of black people in subtle ways. Well, not subtle to me, but subtle to you. You need to become an expert of subtleties. You have to become an expert of being able to discern what is coming from what. You have to become so good at being able to see and identify the source of where words come from and where actions come from, so that you won't be tricked by niceties and pleasantries and, oh Lord, have mercy, I love these white people, they're so nice to me. They're so nice to you. They're so nice to you. And the whole time is all a psychological experiment to see how far they can get with you. And they get, and you give them a lot of mileage. You give white people a lot of road to travel. The white people can travel the whole countryside of your mind because you give them that much road. White people can't even turn the block on my road. You understand? White people can't even get their car out the driveway. You understand? Had an incident with this dude I work with. And all this is all about the killing. But in a way, it's not, because when you're black all the time. You're not black on the occasion where white people say, okay, niggers, it's okay if you're black today because a white person killed you, and it's okay if you show just a little bit of aggression towards us. You can be black for today, but tomorrow you have to go back to being a nigger. Okay? Yeah. No. When you're black, you're black. And you're black. Always. No breaks. No days off. Always black. Always. So this is about the killings of those people that happened, because it's just more of the same evil. This is about that, but at the same time, this is about the continuation of preserving blackness. That is what we do here on this channel. We are into the conservation of blackness. We protect blackness, the essence from which all life stems from. No matter how you want to look at it scientifically, all life comes from the blackness. All good morals, good principles, all the prophets in the Bible were black men. Everything that the world models itself after is from the minds and the hearts of black men. So we are in this modern time where the modern world is attacking blackness. Whether it's putting a gun to the black person's head and killing them, that's not really, even that in truth is not really attacking blackness itself. That's killing a black person. Attacking blackness is when you propagandize homosexuality and target black youths that are coming up, and you know that the youths coming up don't have fathers. You know that they're vulnerable. You know that they're impressionable. You know the psychology of the mind of a child and how the child comes into a place in his life where it begins to question its sexuality. You know that in questioning sexuality, that in that question, you can provide an answer that is totally wrong, but will take that child on the wrong track. You know when someone asks a question, whether they speak it out loud or that they speak it in their hearts, or whether they speak it in their minds, you know that you can provide an answer that will alter the course and the trajectory of where their life will go. So you have white devils, satanic white supremacists, devils who are trying to push the agenda of homosexuality onto the black youths, knowing the condition of black youth, knowing that black youth are in a position of peril and being afraid of their mothers, being afraid of the world outside, being afraid of this, being afraid, being open and being hurt by the lack of having a father. You know that, and you're trying to drive inside of them a wedge that will take them away from their blackness and take them into a place, into a void, because you can't go from blackness into whiteness. It don't matter how goddamn white you act. No matter how much you make your hair straight. No matter how much you put bleach on your face. It don't matter how much you try to speak in a certain vernacular and curve your words and make your words all prim and proper. It doesn't matter. You're not going into whiteness. You're going into the void. Because there's no space for you in whiteness, except for servitude to whiteness. And to be a servant of white people is to be a slave. They don't know how to treat servants. There's a natural propensity in the black man, in most humanity, to serve. Serving others. But the white man knows how to come inside of that natural aspect and corrupt it and turn it into not to servitude of between human brothers and human beings. He comes in, corrupts it, and turns it into slavery, which is a lesser form of servitude where there is no reciprocation of what is being given. So you go without while they get everything. You have to be embarrassed. You have to feel like you in a place where you're uncomfortable, but they get to be comfortable wherever they go. You have to sacrifice your principles, but they get to keep theirs. You have to make compromise after compromise after compromise, but they get to stay intact and whole while you are just left like a broken piece of glass. We're here for the preservation of blackness. And the advancement of blackness, not just to preserve it, not just to put it in a jar and protect it from the elements, no, to advance it. That's why, beloved, our minds are sacred. Our minds are sacred. Our minds are sacred. I know we live in a world where everything seems like it's a good idea, like it's fun. That is a lie. It's so deceptive. It's so damn deceptive. It's so deceptive. Everything's fun. I gotta stop this for part two. Stay tuned. Yeah, and picking back up where I left off. Yeah, it's not 10 people that died. We don't know the number of people that have died by the hands of our enemies. We don't know the number. You can't tally it anymore. It's not astronomical, but it's close. But it's unreasonable. It's not the amount of people that have been killed by the hands of our enemies. It boggles the imagination. Nah, somebody should have killed that boy. Not that boy, pardon me. I'm saying boy, this, you know, like a colloquialism. I'm not calling him a boy. That's not a boy. That's not a boy, Nell. That's not a boy. But he is the offspring of this nation. You know, people talk about Donald Trump. They want to make him. They see that's a psychological game. That's a psychological game that they play on you people. And I need you to be a little bit sharper. When people talk about Donald Trump, they want to make it seem like he is the boogeyman and he's just so unnatural. But let me tell you something. Donald Trump embodies the spirit of America. He is America. Not that he's an American. No. He is America. America is him and he is it. And they are one. And they are the same thing. Synonymous. What is inside the heart of Donald Trump is in the heart of every white person in America.
The problem they have with him is that he doesn't stick to the code of pretending to be nice. Because in pretending, in faking your ideology. No, I'm not a white supremacist. I'm a loving white liberal. A white liberal, according to Malcolm X, is actually worse than the white wolf. The fox is worse than the wolf because the fox plays around with the sheep before it eats it. The fox will cuddle with the sheep. The fox will lick the sheep. And every time it licks it, the sheep thinks that it's getting licks of friendliness and companionship, that it's a friendly lick. But the fox is using these licks as a way to pre-taste the sheep. And the sheep is not smart and not wise to what's going on. Can't blame the sheep. You know, inside of black people, there's so many hopes to want to be accepted by this country. It's not irrational. On one level, it's not irrational. On another level, you should be ashamed of yourself. We should be ashamed of ourselves for not coming to terms with the conditions of our existence in this country and trying to do something to better help our cause instead of always trying to lend our efforts to their efforts. You should be ashamed of that. You shouldn't be happy with being the first black. First black my ass. I made a joke on Facebook. Got an old picture, probably wasn't appropriate. I got an old black and white picture of a black man from back in the 1920s and 1910s. And I said, here, this is the first man to graduate from the second grade. And here's the first black stapler. Because it don't mean nothing. It don't mean nothing. The first black person to tie their shoe. Man, get out of my face. And you comfortable with that? You like treats and you like you're a good dog. You're a good dog. And don't take offense to me. Don't hate me. Hate the situation that you have found yourself in. Don't hate me. Don't put it on me because I'm speaking using the right words, the right selection of words to illustrate the condition that you found yourself in. You're not in no equality position. Omarosa in the White House with Donald Trump, probably doing all kinds of things with that man, sexually and otherwise, just so that she can say, I'm in the White House. And then once the cracker kick her out the White House, oh, now I'm going to tell all your business. Now I'm going to tell. I'm going to tell you, he was very racist. Oh, was he? No. With your gorgeous black self. And you was right there being racist with him, self-hating with him. Yeah, we appreciate the effort of being the spook by the door, but sister, please. But see, again, that's our fault. It's black men. That's our fault. Because we need to do more so the black woman won't have to feel like she has to become a whore to a white man in order to have some success in life. We need to do more so the black woman don't feel like she has to settle for her enemy and go on the other side of the tracks for satisfaction when she can get it right here. The only satisfaction we got for a black woman is what's between our legs. It's got to be more than that. But it comes with coming together. See, the reason why those people were killed in that grocery store is because even though they're a community, they're not really a community. There's no way in hell. No way in hell. Somebody could come up, take out a gun and start unloading the guns into the old ladies, and somebody don't come behind the man and stab him in the throat. Come up behind the man, choke him out and kill him. Come up behind the man, break his knees, step on him, take his gun and blow his brains out. No. And all you niggas and your hypersensitive to the violence against white people, but you're numb to the violence against yourself. You're comfortable with violence perpetrated against you to the point where all you can do is say, oh, that's a shame. All right, yeah, it's a shame. And what's more shameful is that after it happens, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days after it happens, you'll be somewhere in the bank or you'll be somewhere in the grocery store with your nigga ass, and you'll be talking to some white people, ha-haing and kikiing and laughing, and you'll be at the bar throwing back drinks with a white person in 2 or 3 days, if not now, because you don't have no racial solidarity with your people. You don't have any pride in who you are. That's what I mean when I say protect blackness, because blackness is what they took from us. The Million Man March happened in 1995. What a lot of us failed to realize with the Million Man March was that was a miracle. That was the first true black miracle in this nation. Really, in truth, it doesn't even have to be qualified with the word black. Really, in truth, the Million Man March was just a miracle. 2 million black men in one place at one time. Nobody ain't killing each other. Nobody ain't shoving each other every time a brother see another brother or bump into each other, because we packed like sardines next to each other. They all saying peace, 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 brother. Just love, just a whole ocean, a whole sea of love. You don't understand that when the white man saw that, he saw that as the greatest threat to his survival that he ever saw in his entire life. He never thought in 100, 300, 400 years he would ever see that. He never thought that he would live to see the day where 2 million of his ex-slaves would come and congregate in the same place at the same time. Hi. He never thought he'd see it. So he worked diligently to make sure it never happened again. We ain't never gonna see niggas come together like this again. So what we gonna do? Make the lyrics and rap less conscious and more freaky and vulgar. Make the TV shows stupid shows. Got the Steve Harvey Show. Oh shit, don't talk about that. That's my favorite show. Got Martin. Don't talk about Martin. That's my favorite show. I'm going to talk about it. Because those shows were stupid in their essence. In their essence, they had nothing to offer anything to black people. Those shows were moronic shows. The Wayans Brothers. This show, that show. This show, that show. The D.L. Hughley Show. This show, that show. Nothing about the advancement of black people. Just a bunch of stupid jokes. Nothing was about anything that was serious. Never got to see anything serious. The closest thing you got to something serious was looking at the brother on the Reading Rainbow. Or hell, Gullah Gullah Island when we was little babies. But you never got to see anything that was pertaining to anything that was serious when you were watching TV. The programming was, and then the programming made sure that there was always a white friend in the show. There was always a white friend. When you watch That's So Raven, That's So Raven held Chelsea. You watch The Proud Family, there was just this one white girl. The white girl doing hanging out with the black girls. Why would they accept her as one of their own when naturally they don't get along with each other? doesn't make sense, but they will make it make sense in the form of fiction. In a fictionalized world, they will make it make sense so that the white girl and her presence will undermine and undercut the connection between those black people. The black people can't be fully black because there's always a white friend. When you're watching the Parkers, there's a white friend. Because the white friend is supposed to be like a double agent. Where she's white, she represents whiteness, but she also represents, I'm the innocent one. I'm the one who can be around black people. It doesn't exist. I had a sister I knew. We would paint together. She was very dark. Black sister from Georgia. She had a liver condition where she had to go and get dialysis. So it made her skin darker than it should be. Naturally. Made her eyes yellow. She hated herself. But she was so beautiful. She was so beautiful. She hated herself. And she would settle. Because no brothers took an interest in her. But she was so beautiful. And her soul. Brothers wouldn't take an interest in her. So she settled for white men. And she settled for ugly, disgusting white men. Just to have somewhere to stay. Just so she wouldn't feel alone. And this sister had a white man who would call her nigger. And she would tell me about it in the car. He calls me nigger. He hits me. And when she died, we went over to her apartment. As it was not really a commemoration of her, because unfortunately she was beautiful, but she came from a family of niggas, so she didn't really have a commemoratory going away for her life. Her brother spent the whole time drunk. And there's this white man that she used to date. For half the evening, the brother is arguing with me about why I follow Minister Farrakhan. And trying to tap the white man in for support. Trying to tap the white man on the shoulder. Like, yeah, man, this nigga following Farrakhan. And the white man saying, yeah, I can't follow anybody that's racist. Tell you how stupid you niggas are. Tell you how stupid you niggas are. So he's trying to get support from a white man who was beating his sister and calling her a nigga. Then come to find out, during that time, we're talking, and he says, he switches. Because the thing about the nigga psychology is, the nigga he don't truly have a mind of his own. So when I started showing aggression towards the white man, and it didn't start like that. Pardon my language. I'm out of order in my events because I'm trying to tell a story and make it interesting to you as you're listening to it. When the white man and my brother with, you know, trying to double team me, talking about I'm a racist. I got offended. You're going to call me a racist and you're sitting here with this cracker here. So it was really the white man who was being aggressive first, because as a white man, you should shut your damn mouth when you hear two brothers talking. You don't have no business in this. You shouldn't even be here. So then he starts to say, well, Aleem, you're a racist. And he starts getting mad and he's drunk. So he gets up in my face. So I shoot up. I said, man, what are you about to do? Because whatever you're thinking about doing, don't you dare do it. He has a bottle, an empty bottle in his hand. I said, don't you dare think that you're about to do it. So I take the bottle. I smack his hat off of his head. Then I push him into the wall. Then I grab the bottle out of his hand. The hell you doing with this? And I take the bottle in the kitchen, throw it in the trash. So now the brother, the sister's brother, my brother, that was just sitting here talking to me, trying to pick on me, I guess he thought he was doing. Now his anger has shifted from being against me to now against the white man. Now he started bringing stuff up. Yeah, didn't you kick my sister in the stomach a couple of weeks ago? I'm like, what? I looked at the white man. I said, you kicked this sister in the stomach? He said, I had to. She was being, you know, all crazy. So her brother, man, then he steps up. But he had to see an example of what stepping up looks like for him to step up. He had to see my example by the grace of Allah. I don't want to get carried away, because if it wasn't for Allah, I wouldn't have an example to know that I could smack a hat off a white man and push him into a wall and probably kill him too if I, you know, if it called for it. I have no problems with that. I wasn't born a Negro. Wasn't born under the conditioning of a Negro. I was born in the 90s. I was born in a very hot time. I was born at really the peak of black consciousness. The conditions of my birth was perfect. I was born at the peak of black consciousness, where everybody was saying peace and assalamu alaikum and wearing dashikis and walking down the street looking good. I wasn't born in a generation where everything on TV was, oh, let's all stand together and hold hands, even though in real life it ain't nothing like that. Even though in real life it's a bunch of hatred. But on TV, they have to censor the hatred that white people show black people by showing us as all a bunch of damn friends. Like, that's a real fucking reality. Now, I wasn't born in the time. I wasn't born behind time either, in the 60s and the 70s, when Negroes was getting beat up. And the only thing they could do, they couldn't even feel justified in getting mad. If a black person got mad, they would have to wait until they got home to show their anger, because they wouldn't even feel comfortable showing their anger in front of a white man. I wasn't born in that time either. So I was born in the time of, we'll kill you, straight up. And everybody that I grew up with, they the same way. We not playing no games. We not playing with you. And you're not playing with us. That's why. You're not playing with us, and we're not playing with you. And we're coming alive. We're coming alive. We ain't gonna be niggas forever. We're coming alive. Got these two. Oh, and to finish that story, that brother ended up slapping that white man because the white man kept lying to him. Said, if you lie to me one more time, I'm going to take this hand and I'm going to smack the shit out you. And the white man kept lying because white men don't know what else to do when they're in situations where they're in trouble. He said, no, I didn't do anything. Smack. You lie again, I'm telling you, I'm going to smack you again. I'm talking. Please, I'm talking now. Just, I'm talking, okay? I'll play with you guys later, okay? Up. So, yeah, he smacked the hell out that man. It was beautiful. It was great. Loved it. The tear rolled down the white man's face. And black people are so sympathetic to white pain. I'm not. Not when it's deserved. You gonna kick a black woman in her stomach. She got dialysis. She got a bad liver. You could have killed her. But to hell with that. You kicked a black woman in her stomach. Now she dead. Not dead because of you. Dead because of other circumstances. But we don't want her to be dead. We wanted her to be alive. And you sitting here with us. And you perpetrated crimes against her. Now something got to happen to you, man. I'm not like other people. I'm not like some of y'all. Work with these two white guys at work. The white man can't help himself. He is what he is. It's his nature. Working with these two at work. And we're doing our job. I'm working hard, scrubbing, doing everything. So we're just about done. And we're wrapping everything up. I finished last, but then turns out the customer wanted what I did to be done again because she wasn't satisfied with it, which is fine. But instead of telling me that, the white guy that I work with, he goes and does it himself, which is also fine, right? Doesn't take two people to do one thing. It's the last thing that we got to do. She talked to you about it. You do it. I'ma sit in the car. But then I started thinking, let me go see what these guys is up to. So I go around the house, like, hey, yo, what's going on? Yeah, a customer wanted us to do the windows again because they weren't done correctly. Oh, I didn't do them right? Oh, wow. All right, is there anything I can do? No. No, there's nothing you can do. But you shouldn't be chilling in the car. Wait, what? Yeah, you shouldn't be chilling in the car. So I wasn't chilling in the car. I was waiting for us to go to our next house because everything's done. I don't appreciate the narration that you're trying to suggest that I don't work as hard as you or something when I can outwork all of you all day long. I don't appreciate that. I said, if you wanted me to do it, you could have came up to me and communicated that to me. Don't not communicate, but then be somewhere in your mind angry at the fact that you're doing something that I could have did because it was me who did the wrong thing, supposedly. Come to me and talk to me and we'll figure it out. Peacefully. But don't say that. I said, I don't like the type of manager who tells you to sweep the floor because there's nothing else to do. If there's nothing else to do, then let me do what I want to do until there's something else to do. I'm not your damn child. I'm not chilling in the car. I'm waiting to go to the next place to do the next thing. Because the insinuation is that niggas is lazy. These niggas are lazy. I beg your pardon, we built this country. And all of our fathers and grandfathers worked 2 and 3 jobs. And we work the same amount of jobs now. I beg your pardon. You crackers and all your narrations against us, I beg your pardon. No, I didn't let him get away with that. Nah. You wanted me to do it, tell me to do it. You don't need me to do it, then you do it and shut the fuck up about it. Period. Gotta learn how to deal with these devils. Fight them. Fight them. You understand what I just said? When there's an opportunity, when the opportunity arises, and it always will arise because they are sociopaths and they don't know how to live peacefully with others. So the opportunity always is going to arise on their hands. When you're wrong about something, be humble and take accountability for it. But when they're wrong, use that opportunity to tell them that they're wrong. Don't you back away in fear from no goddamn devil. So then they can come in the next day and select you to be a target and put a bullet in your head because you ain't a threat. You just a stupid nigga who's scared of everything. I don't know how to swim. I'm scared to swim. I'm scared of dogs. I'm scared of this. I'm scared of that. I scared. You better. You better get right, brother and sister. Sister too. Don't think that being a punk is just for men, sis. You sisters can be punks too. Out here trying to play triple agent, not even double agent. Black woman out here trying to play triple, quadruple agent. I'm on the gay side. I'm on the feminist side. I'm on the black woman side, and then sometimes I'm on the black man side. You're going to cut that out too. You're going to cut that out too. Sometimes I'm on the black man side, but for the most part, I'm pro gay and pro white and pro feminist. You're going to cut that out too. Because you don't have no damn room to be acting like a traitor when all you got came from a black man and from a black woman trying to make sure you had something. And I'm going to leave it at that. Not going to put too much fire down your back because the majority of the fire belong on us. Because if we had built a gate around the house, you would have never left it. But there's no gate around the black community. And when I say gate, I don't mean like a dog. I mean a fortress to protect what's on the inside. And there ain't no fortress. So you just wander around aimlessly like a nomad. Or as Dr. Umar Johnson said, racially homeless. Walking around, not knowing where to go. And you end up in the arms of a white person. And then everything on TV is telling you the same thing because they're programmed, they're targeting the black woman to make her the surrogate mother of their seed. They want the black woman to be the womb that produces their seed so that they can have a continuation of their white supremacist legacy in the form of little beige children. Little mixed kids that carry on the legacy of white supremacy after the white man is gone. Hell no. Hell no. I gotta get to work. I'll talk to y'all later. But remember what I said. Keep your head up. Stay strong in your heart. Keep your eyes open.
and be aware of your surroundings. Peace.